It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. On this weekend show, we are going to hear the latest information from Tuolumne County Superintendent of Schools Kathy Parker about what is known looking ahead to the fall semester. Superintendent Parker, it's great to have you back on Motherlode Views.
Thank you for having me, BJ.
So as we sit and talk here in late June, what is kind of known and the latest when it comes to looking ahead to the fall?
Well, there's still a lot of decision-making still going on at the state level that has a direct impact on how we open schools in the fall. However, one big hurdle that was reached this week was an agreement on the state budget, which is to be signed later in the week. And hopefully once we have that signed budget, we can move forward with some planning based on what we know to be in that budget document. However, we have to keep in mind that we still are anticipating tax receipts to come into the state in mid-July, and that will trigger a revision in the state budget, which will then again trigger another budget revision at the local level as well, and that will have some impacts on our reopening abilities at the local level. And I want to just talk about some of the specifics that are in the budget that I think that the community needs to be aware of as we move forward and what that impact is to our local budgets at our school districts. So while the budget does not hold the cuts that were initially proposed in the governor's May revise, which was up to a 10% cut in school funds, what they have agreed to is to balance the budget on what we call deferrals. So think of deferrals as borrowing money from your savings account, and you're going to pay that back at some point. Well, in this case, this is what we call a mega deferral. So we already have a deferral where the state has not given us our June apportionment to true up the end of the year cost for operating our schools based on our attendance. So that was held from being provided to us in June and is now pushed off into July. And so in the accounting world, it looks like you have a balanced budget, but what it balances on is that you're going to have to do some interfund transfers and borrowing in order to, in this case, make our payroll in June. Next year's budget is even more of a mega deferral. This past deferral, just for holding on to June's apportionment and waiting until July, that's a $1.8 billion June deferral across the state. The deferrals proposed for next year, it is a deferral that's taking the February deferral and paying that in November, taking March's payment and paying that in October. It is a mega deferral that adds up to $9.19 billion in deferrals for school districts across the state. So basically, you need to think about the last payment that school districts would receive next year for operating school would happen with a January apportionment, and they would have to make payroll, pay all of their expenses, and operate schools from February on without having any more income coming into the school districts until the following year. That's how a deferral works. So that means that they're going to have to rely upon their reserves, temporary interfund transfers from restricted funds, and that means that we have to really look closely at cash flows. Small districts don't have a lot of cash on hand. We just don't have the ability to do that. As our money comes in, we tend to have to expend it right away because we have small budgets. Our districts, fortunately, are doing pretty well in cash flow and also being able to borrow temporarily from interfund transfers. We have provided guidance to the districts that this was probably going to be the case for the next budget year, so they've all been taking steps to hold on to their cash in order to be able to operate for next year. But that's a huge number. It's almost like a made-up number, $9.19 billion in deferrals for next year. Now, that number could drop based on if any federal funds become available. But as we have seen with the CARES funding and how it's being allocated to districts across the state of California, it's not going to help most of our districts in our county. It's based on what we call supplemental concentration grant funding, which is generated from our most needy students, our low-income foster youth, and our English learner populations. We only have two districts that have a real significant number of those students, and that's Jamestown Elementary and Columbia School Districts. So they'll receive some additional funding from that CARES money, but for most of our rural small districts, they will not benefit from the CARES funding, not as much as these large urban districts. So I think that when the community understands, they hear, there has been no cuts to the LCFS funding. That sounds great, but I think they need to understand the reality of how that budget was balanced, which is they're holding on to the money that they're supposed to be giving school districts for a significant part of the year next year in order to balance their budget. And that's a real problem for our community and for our districts moving forward.
So you mentioned smaller districts, they could borrow against reserve funds if they have it, if not borrowing from interfund transfers. What do you mean by interfund transfers?
An interfund transfer is when you have a restricted fund and then you borrow that. So it might be something like deferred maintenance, which is a fund that you put in money so that you can do larger projects that you have on a maintenance kind of schedule. And so instead of using that money, because that money won't be used for multiple years out, you might temporarily borrow against that funding source so that you can go ahead and pay for your current year's expenses. That's what interfund transfers mean.
Got it. So with all those things that you just explained with those changes and borrowing, do you anticipate the local school districts will pretty much have the same amount of funding for this next school year looking ahead?
On paper, we will, but when it comes to cash and money in the bank, it'll be a tough year for our districts. We are also looking at what was in that funding bill in the budget, some what we call trailer bill language, and it's around the flexibility of providing instructional services to students. So as we know, we're entering into a time period of we don't know what's going to happen. We've just seen in our county in the last couple of weeks an increase in cases, and we don't anticipate that dropping anytime soon. It's hard to project what's going to happen in 2 months, but what we do know is there's going to be an increased cost in providing education in our county for all districts and for the county programs that we operate on behalf of those districts. Those costs are everything from increased cleaning protocols to additional bus routes, perhaps. It could be that we are implementing a combination of distance learning and in-person learning, which requires more staff to help make that a reality. So it just takes more money in this climate to be able to operate schools safely. What we're concerned about in the trailer bill language is that there is a flexibility in the number of instructional minutes that are required by districts to provide students. And if people don't know, short education is in California, the number of instructional days required by school districts is 180 days, and then there's a number of instructional minutes depending on the grade level. That's a requirement. You have to meet both. You have to meet 180 days, and you have to meet a certain number of minutes on average over that course of the year. Well, the instructional minutes has been given some flexibility based on some guidance that we have seen about what that would look like if students weren't attending in person. So let's say we were going to implement a cohorting where half the students come for part of the week and another half come for another part. We're going to have to provide some very directed distance learning options for those students. We have to have a certain accounting method that goes along with it that makes it very difficult to implement in the way that the very restrictive language has been provided. So we're concerned about that because it's one of those situations where you think you're doing everything right and you go through an audit and they say, oh, you didn't do this one piece of paper right, and a school district could potentially lose funding. So that's why we need the flexibility, because our decisions about moving forward on the reopening of school, it number one has to be based on the safety of students and staff. It can't be held punitive to us that we did everything that we could possible because of we're taking the interest of health of students and staff as the number one priority. And because of a paperwork error, we become penalized as a result. And so that's why we're concerned about this trailer bill language. That's the final piece of a budget that goes forward. So we know that that is still a work in progress at the state level.
Pick up on this conversation in just a minute. We're talking with Kathy Parker, Tuolumne County Superintendent of Schools, on this weekend's Mother Load Views. Mother Load Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. We'll have more in just a minute.